Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
House Republicans meet behind closed doors to discuss Medicaid strategy, seemingly in violation of the state's open government provisions.
When government shuts the door on us and it discusses our business in secret, that breeds distrust.
Also tonight, is a Florida government shutdown on the horizon? The state heads into uncharted waters as the standoff continues.
There's no such thing as a continuation budget. We don't do continuing resolutions like they do in Congress. That's not the way it works at the state level. So
we'll also visit the floors of the House and Senate for a seeming avalanche of bill action, including debates on children's services, revenge porn, and the return of black bear hunting to Florida. It's midweek in the next to final week of the 2015 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. The House GOP met behind closed doors yesterday to discuss a strategy regarding a possible extension of Medicaid. Nick Evans reports the move has raised the ire of the Democrats and open government advocates, but it seems there's very little that can be done.
House Speaker Steve Crisafulli says the House Republican caucus met Tuesday morning to discuss the history of LIP, or low-income pool funding.
Really, more than anything, it was a history lesson, explaining to our members what we have behind us.
So did the Senate.
We had a really good presentation. It was good to kind of go through the history of LIP and for everybody to understand how we got to where we are.
That's Senate President Andy Gardner. On the House side, they had documents.
That is a compilation of information that we've done over time, and we have now put it all together for them so that they have information, especially information. Oh, it's right over here, so y'all will have that. But there's some charts and graphs in there that.
So did the Senate.
I believe y'all have been provided some of the packets. I was just talking with Senator Bradley.
So what's the difference? Well, for one, seating.
Really well, if you would come on in and fill up the seats. Thank you. Or I'll start just calling some names. Edward, you want to come grab a seat?
That's Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee inviting the public to pile into the committee chambers for their presentation. But House lawmakers limited their meeting to Republicans and held it behind closed doors, which would seem to violate Florida's Sunshine Amendment.
Article 3, Section 4E, that says all prearranged meetings of three or more legislators who are meeting for the purpose of taking formal legislative action or discussing pending legislation must be reasonably open to the public.
That's Barbara Peterson. She's president of an advocacy organization for open government called the First Amendment Foundation. But Crisafulli insists their meeting's on the up and up. Just a history lesson. No substantive policy discussions.
We did give them a background, however, on LIP and Medicaid expansion and what's going on in the Senate and what we have done in the past here in the House and what we anticipate we'll see in the future.
And while some might reasonably say that sounds an awful lot like a policy discussion, Peterson points out there's just one problem.
Unfortunately, that constitutional right of access is subject to the sole interpretation, implementation, and enforcement by each chamber.
And House Democrats are unhappy about being left out, too. Newport Richey Representative Amanda Murphy believes the closed meeting was a sunshine violation, but she agrees there's very little her caucus can do about it. Most of all, though, she says the reasons Republicans have given publicly for holding the meeting just don't make sense.
When they are supposed to be giving lots of information, it would have helped for maybe some of us to have been invited. If they're so concerned and want their opinion out there, why not invite the press and let the whole state understand what they seem to understand about LIP that the rest of us are missing?
That's because the meeting appears to be less of a history lesson and more like a halftime speech, or perhaps for some members, a trip to the woodshed. Although lawmakers met out of sight, numerous media outlets have reported hearing Crisafulli telling his fellow Republicans to trust us and stand like a rock against the Senate's plan to accept federal money and expand Medicaid. but holding fast, as Krista Foley encourages, will likely lead to a special session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Could Florida soon be looking a lot like the federal government did in 2013 when it shut down due to budget conflicts? That's a scenario state lawmakers are looking to avoid, but as Lynn Hatter reports, the state may not have a budget in place before the start of the July 1st fiscal year.
Florida's budget conflict is about health care funding and whether the federal government will renew a program valued at $2 billion. The low-income pool shores up hospitals treating large numbers of uninsured patients. And while the state has known for more than a year the program would expire, it formally requested an extension this week, setting in motion a timeline that, Republican Senator Don Gates explains, blows past the state's May 1st deadline to have a budget in place.
Even if everything goes well, the fact that nothing has happened for a year puts us into the next fiscal year with a budget that's not solvent.
The fiscal year begins July 1st, and by Gates's estimate, the soonest Florida would have a response is July 4th. Legislative leaders know that's a problem, and Governor Rick Scott has called on lawmakers to create what he calls a continuation budget. But Senate Appropriations Chairman Tom Lee says there's no such thing.
You know, that's a made up word in the budget lexicon. There's no such thing as a continuation. Well, there is a budget. There could be a scrubbed clean budget that starts over from scratch, works back through the process, only funds the base. But that's essentially what I have already talked to them about on one occasion, just hypotheticals that, you know, you pass a budget with several billion dollars in reserves in it, and then you sit back and wait for answers from the federal government.
Lee says the rest of the budget answers may not come until late June, and that opens the door to some awkward conversations in a state that has touted its ability to have balanced budgets and big rainy day funds. Now lawmakers are facing the very real possibility that come July 1st, the state won't have a budget. And Lee says that would be a first.
I don't know of any mechanism that allows us to do that, but I will admit, you know, the fact that something hasn't been done in Florida history doesn't mean it isn't going to happen this session. A lot of other things happen.
The state budget includes funding for schools, hospitals, local health clinics, transportation, social services. Even federal programs are administered through it. And it's generally accepted that many of the state's agencies and other entities could exist for a while on their reserves. But that's not something that's ideal, nor is it good for budgeting, says the Florida Association of School Boards, Andrea Messina.
Funds that are carryover in certain categories, and some school districts have a borrowing capacity greater than other school districts if they had to borrow some money. But I have to tell you, right now, what I'm hearing from board members is great concern over the inability to get a decision here.
And School Board Association Interim Director Bill Graham says if he were in the position of local school boards, there could be program cuts. And one casualty could be summer school.
Your real short-term expense is summer school that you have starting in June, or, you know, and running 4, 5, 6 weeks, because you're funding it with the majority of your money is needed during the summer while the majority of the students are out and a good part of your workforce is off duty.
Florida lawmakers could also run afoul of the state constitution. The budget is the one bill lawmakers must pass each year. But more than that, they risk the public's trust, says USF political scientist Susan McManus.
Public opinion polls show that Floridians and Americans at large are really fed up with government that can't get things done. And it doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans, the public's trust in their governing leaders is not very high, and this certainly is not going to help matters.
Furthermore, McManus says Republicans, who make up the majority party in the legislature, may take the brunt of the blame.
This is a bad political move, and to people who look at it from the outside looking in, it looks like it's a battle between egos rather than philosophy.
The last time the legislature came this close to blowing a budgetary deadline was 1992. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida lawmakers are continuing to pass bills to protect kids, including a measure allowing young victims to secretly record their attackers.
It's one of the simple things that we can do as part of the Florida legislature, but will have an impact for so many children and give them a voice that is otherwise quiet.
At the urging of a young victim and law enforcement, the Senate today tentatively approved a measure that would outlaw so-called revenge porn.
The message is that this is ruining lives, and it's not just ruining futures, but, you know, people are killing themselves from it.
Local pension reform sparks spirited legislative debate.
They knew that 1999 law was a gift to them that was hurting the cities and ultimately hurting the taxpayers.
And the rule is still don't feed the bears, but if you do, wildlife officials are knocking the initial penalty for feeding a bear down from a criminal charge to a $100 fine.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
Bills aimed at helping Florida's young people passed the state Senate today. Sasha Cordner has that story.
The first measure the Florida Senate unanimously passed allows young victims of sexual assault or physical violence to secretly record their attackers as evidence in court. It's limited to victims under 18, unlike the measure that passed the House last month, or as bill sponsor Fort Myers Republican Lisbeth Beniquisto explains it.
The Senate bill is very specifically tailored to protect those children under the age of 18, and that is a different position than the House. They have it as a wide open exemption.
Now both measures include the more narrow exemption, and Beniquisto says she's doing this on behalf of a girl in her district
who for 6 years at the hands of her stepfather was subject to unspeakable abuse. And she reported that abuse and no one believed her. Not her mother, not her teacher. No one believed that she was enduring these kind of things in her own home. And the peace and safety of her own home.
Beniquisto says the only person to believe her was the girl's boyfriend.
So her boyfriend suggested she record some of these happenings, and she did. She turned the recording over to law enforcement. It became evidence. Her stepfather was convicted. But unfortunately, on appeal, the conviction was overturned because in the state of Florida, you are not allowed to tape communications these type of events without the other person's permission. So the Supreme Court said this is an issue that needs to be addressed.
And that's why she wants to fix that loophole in the law.
And give voice to the concerns and fears of children across the state and allow them to bring their abusers to justice.
Attorney General Pam Bondi supports the bill. So does sex abuse survivor and victims advocate Lauren Book, who concluded her sixth annual 1,500-mile Walk in My Shoes journey at the Capitol Wednesday as part of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Book has helped get similar laws on the books to help victims.
As we continue with our legislative progression in keeping children safe, it's essential that laws keep up with new and developing technology. As we know, one in three girls and one in five boys will become the victim of child sexual abuse before their 18th birthday. And we know that one of the biggest barriers to these young victims getting help and healing to become thriving survivors is disclosing what has happened to them.
Another measure that passed the Senate expands Florida's civil citation program. The bipartisan bill is by Hialeah Republican Renee Garcia and Jacksonville Democrat Audrey Gibson.
The bill increases the use of civil citations to give more second chances to our nonviolent misdemeanor juvenile offenses. Also includes the ability to give a simple warning to a youth or inform the youth's parents of a misdemeanor.
It also now conforms to the House language that limits the number of civil citations given to minors.
Rather than open-ended use of civil citations, that civil citations may be used in up to two subsequent misdemeanors following the first issuance of a civil citation. So it's three.
The House measure by Deerfield Beach Democratic Representative Gwendolyn Clark Reed is expected to be taken up Thursday. Meanwhile, the House approved a juvenile justice-related bill by Cape Coral Republican Representative Dane Eagle.
It's by far my favorite bill. It's my third year working on this bill. You could tell I'm dedicated to accountability, parental responsibility. The idea of this bill is to infuse some parental responsibility into our juvenile justice system by allowing the judge to tie a parent or guardian to a juvenile's restitution. That restitution can be paid up to the judge's jurisdiction in a monetary manner or through community service.
But Representative Clark Reed was among four lawmakers who voted against the bill. She says it's unfair the measure exempts foster care parents or the Florida Department of Children and Families from paying the restitution of a juvenile under their care if the child can't pay. Eagle says the bill also makes sure restitution would stick with the child past 18, but Clark Reed says that's not enough.
I know you told me that it gets carried on, but that still isn't good enough for me. I think that something more concrete, and if these children are in state custody, the state needs to pay the restitution.
The measure Senate companion has one more stop to go before it heads to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
It can start as a lark, a split second of poor judgment and misplaced trust, and it can end in a cyber nightmare that ruins careers or worse. As Jim Ash reports, the state Senate gave tentative approval today to a bill outlawing revenge porn.
Florida lawmakers have heard the pitch to outlaw revenge porn twice before. Here's Republican David Simmons of Altamont Springs making headway Wednesday on the Senate floor.
I knew it was originally a felony in the original bill, but it's been moved to a misdemeanor.
Are there further questions? Further questions? Seeing none, pursuant to Rule 4.19, the bill is placed on the counter. Bill's a third reading. Take up and read next bill.
Behind the dry legislative process stand thousands of victims. Most of them are women who let a boyfriend or a husband take compromising photos. When the relationship went south, the photos went online. One of them is Carly Hellstrom, an FSU student who says she was having a brief romance when she let her boyfriend take nude photos. She ended up giving tearful testimony to legislative committees.
I wish I had the legal attention of this last year when I needed it, when I had my picture uploaded to a national gossip website and it had over 100,000 views. And it was the first thing you saw when you Googled my name for the past year.
Hellstrom calls it a sex crime. She says the fallout for victims ranges from ruined careers to suicide.
It can't wait. And it will not only prevent people from uploading pictures of victims, but it will save lives.
The bill bans uploading sexually explicit images of an identifiable person to a social website. It exempts, quote, providers of internet or storage services. That should protect search engines like Google, sponsors say. First Amendment rights might be a problem, according to a staff analysis, but 15 states ban revenge porn, and no challenge has reached an appellate court. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that child pornography isn't a free speech right. Republican Representative Tom Goodson of Titusville filed the House version. The idea originated in Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey's cyber crimes unit.
It gives us the teeth to not only go after that individual, but to be able to have the tools we need to go after them.
Goodson's bill could come up for an initial vote on the House floor as early as Friday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Local government pensions remain a ticking time bomb in Florida, warn lawmakers who cite persistent underfunding and overpromising. Now, as Keita Browning reports, a bill to redress the issue is moving ahead in the legislature.
Over 60% of local pensions are underfunded in the state. For nearly a decade now, lawmakers have been working to address the issue with little advancement. But Wednesday, a bipartisan proposal to reform Florida's local pension program saw progress on the Senate floor. Senator John Bradley says his bill corrects a law passed in 1999 that used tax dollars paid by citizens to fund local police and firefighter retirement pensions.
I wish you could all have been in our meetings with fire and police over the years, especially this year, to see how far they have given, because they knew that 1999 law was a gift to them that was hurting the cities and ultimately hurting the taxpayers. So I want to give tremendous gratitude and thanks to them.
Bradley says though the state received support from local unions, there were some groups that were disingenuous in the process, mainly the cities.
There were groups that came out in opposition of a bill that never read the bill, and they held consortiums without including the unions. And I have a real problem with that. I have a problem with the way some of the cities, not all, some were wonderful, but the way some of the cities came to the state year after year after year for bailouts. And that's all they wanted was a bailout.
Bradley's plan lets government use some insurance premium tax dollars to pay for both minimum benefits and additional ones as negotiated through collective bargaining. But as pensions have grown increasingly unstable, it hasn't made much sense that those dollars continue to fund only the extra benefits. The city of Naples has been at the heart of the debate. A state interpretation called the Naples Letter has allowed some cities to use the tax money to cover benefits, says Senator Garrett Richter.
They seem to think that there's not an acknowledgement that all the premium tax revenue allocated to the local fire and police retirement benefits does not even cover the cost of the minimum benefits or the multiplier. And they're concerned that this will raise the minimum benefit requirement.
But Senator Bradley says premium tax revenues were never intended to fully fund minimum benefits for state workers. The measure passed 36-0 in the Senate Wednesday and is up next for review by the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Keita Browning.
You're listening to Capitol Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thursday shaping up as another hectic day on both House and Senate calendars, and we get an advanced look from Ronald J. Evan.
The House convenes at 9 on Thursday morning with a full agenda. There's a bill that waives out-of-state fees for veterans and dependents receiving federal education benefits, a measure that revises certain minimum standards for child care facilities and personnel. The powdered alcohol bill comes up for a vote. It prohibits the sale of alcoholic beverages in powdered form. And a bill that authorizes the sale of malt beverages packaged in individual containers of certain sizes if they are filled at the point of sale. Senate Democrats caucus at 9 Thursday morning, with the Senate going into session at 10. The Senate will take up a memorial urging Congress and the President to enact new economic sanctions against Iran. There are several veterans bills, including one creating the Military and Overseas Voting Assistance Task Force within the Department of State. Another veterans measure authorizes local governing bodies to aid and assist veterans in presenting claims for securing federal and state benefits. The Senate will take up an abortion bill that requires a 24-hour waiting period. An amendment has been added that includes exceptions for victims of rape, incest, domestic violence, or human trafficking. And those are some of the bills on the agendas of the Florida House and Senate Thursday, April 23rd. I'm Ronald J. Evan.
Finally tonight, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission officials say a plan that would open a bear hunting season for the first time in about 20 years could help combat the rise in human-to-bear interaction. But Regan McCarthy reports they're not counting on only that.
Officials say bears lured from the woods by the smell of trash or food is one reason for an increase in the number of bears bumping into humans. To combat that, they're encouraging communities with black bear populations to use bear-proof trash cans, and they're asking for a change in bear feeding legislation. Inverness Republican Senator Charlie Dean has a bill to do that. It's part of a larger package proposed by the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
It also creates new penalty structures for feeding bears, alligators, or crocodiles, and modifies penalties for violating wildlife and freshwater fish feeding rules.
The change would reduce the initial penalty for feeding a bear from a second-degree misdemeanor to a civil penalty and a $100 fine. But during an interview with Florida Public Radio earlier this year, Thomas Eason, director of Habitat and Species Coordination for the FWC, said what he calls a graduated penalty structure will help wildlife officials better enforce the rule.
We view it overall as it's overall a strengthening. On the front end, we want to work with more people and not have the idea of a criminal infraction either holding our officers back and or, you know, just mixing up the messaging a little bit, but then ramping up well past, you know, a second degree misdemeanor, ultimately up to a felony for repeat offenders.
In 2013, FWC officials euthanized 23 bears who had become dependent on human food and were becoming dangerous. In that same year, officials issued 28 feeding rule warnings, but just 4 citations. Eason says some wildlife officials are hesitant to issue a citation as stiff as a second-degree misdemeanor. And on the flip side, he says some people don't take the issue seriously enough.
An analogy would be speeding tickets. It's like, you know, it's like if you're speeding and you get caught speeding, you're, unless you're egregiously, you know, recklessly endangering people, you're not going to get a criminal infraction. It's a fine, basically. So the idea is to have that as the initial penalty, but then again, ramp up for people that, after all that, are still feeding to go to even more serious penalties.
The measure is awaiting a hearing in the full Senate. Meanwhile, the House version of the bill has just passed with only one vote against it. The no vote comes from Coral Springs Democratic Representative Jared Moskowitz. He proposed a couple of changes to the legislation when it came up on the floor.
This amendment comes right out of the draft rule that the FWC has already. This amendment would prevent the use of dogs to corner a bear in the process of hunting.
Moskowitz says while the FWC's bear hunting plan already includes provisions that would prohibit the use of dogs to hunt black bears, he wants to make sure it sticks. The FWC's bear hunting plan hasn't been finalized, and it won't be until June. In the meantime, he says he's worried about what would happen to dogs if the FWC changes its mind and does let hunters use them.
This practice is to send a pack of dogs after the bear. It's to get a bear in the corner. Well, as soon as the bear's cornered, the bear turns around and attacks the dogs while the hunters run to go kill the bear.
The amendment failed. The House took up a full vote on the original measure Wednesday. It passed and is awaiting action in the Senate. The FWC is scheduled to talk over its black bear hunting plan at its next meeting in June. A hunt could start as early as October. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Matthew Seeger. We also thank Keita Browning and our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2015 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.